You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Yeah. Our government cares about you.
They ain't giving up a second thought about you, no. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me. You gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Get some people.
Where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
be?
Tell me
what your life is.
What's with your life?
Running like a rare disease.
Running like a rare disease. Get some people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yeah. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God. For all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything was well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day. Hope you're going to get a chance to do all the things you should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, you're going to get it done anyway, because it has to be done. You just can't put it off. You got to get it done, and you will. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcast. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. But of course, the shortcut, just go to whatever is your server, Google, whatever, and put in babaoshi.net. 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 And once again, there will be programs that are dated and titled. Thanks to my good brother, Brother Kwaku. Appreciate him. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. On Mondays, from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., Black Therapy Central with Dr. Kamal Kamban, Dr. Mawia Kamban, and their daughter, Nataki Kamban, from 8 to 9 on Mondays. Right after that program, from 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. They had a great program last night. The sisters were beautiful. You know, it's Women's Month, and Dr. Rogers had a program on with the sisters, and it was great, great program, Dr. Rogers, always. On Wednesdays, today, this evening, the Black Farmers Report. The Black Farmers Report this evening from 8 to 9 on Time for an Awakening. Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, you know what time it is. That's right, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, 8 p.m. on Fridays. Saturday at 7 p.m., the Sankofa Elders Council from 7 to 9 on Saturday. And then once again on Sunday at 7 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We buy black. We buy black, the largest online marketplace for American and African owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. Brothers and sisters, array of products and so forth produced by us. Go to WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. Africa for the Africans. Brother Bamani Tayemba has been taking our people to the motherland on the trip of a lifetime. Brothers and sisters, he's ready to go again in May, May 24th to June 5th. And it's only $3,800 going to Ghana. And then November 17th through the 28th, November 17th through the 28th, also for only $3,800, Tanzania. Some people pronounce it Tanzania, but it's Tanzania. That's how they pronounce it, you know. December 24th to January 5th, $4,000. He had to increase the cost by $200. It's understandable. Everything else is going up, ain't it?
Yep, and that ain't much. So December 24th to January 5th, and that also is, that's for $1,000, and that's going to Ghana. It's going to Ghana, December 24th to January 5th. And then March 31st to April 10th, only $3,800. This was the trip that was postponed, and now it is going to be March 31st to January 10th. That's going to Senegal and Gambia. And then this one was just added, December 24th, this year, the end of the year, to January 4th, $4,000, going to South Africa, going to South Africa. That must be a replacement or a typo because he has the December 24th Ghana trip. And this is December 24th as well, going to 2023, going to South Africa. But also, too, brothers and sisters, go to the website. You'll have the opportunity to purchase land. And you also have the opportunity to invest and to repatriate to the Pan-African community in Ghana. So AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Brothers and sisters, if you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Habashah Incorporated.org. Brothers and sisters, they are doing the work. Brothers and sisters, go online to HabashahIncorporated.org and look at the great work projects they have going on here in the States, here in the Atlanta area, the programs, the Habashah Works Program, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Golden Growers and the Urban Green Jobs. And of course, they have the Kashi Project going on. And of course, the Kashi Project launch will be October 8th through the 17th in Ghana, West Africa. And of course, they're asking you to invest. And of course, they're tax deductible. Go to HabashahIncorporated.org. LEDGE program. LEDGE means the land for the environmental development of group economics. Land for the environmental development for group economics. We're talking about great projects that the LEDGE program is involved in because they deal with the four areas of human existence: food, water, clothing, and shelter. They have 12 projects in 6 countries on the motherland with over 170 people employed and over 260 members. Become a member of the LEDGE Group. In fact, if you become a member of the LEDGE Group, you have the opportunity to buy land in Tanzania for $250 an acre. That's right. Take advantage of it. The LEDGE Group. Abibiatumi. A-B-I-B-I-T-U-M-I.com. Abibiatumi.com. Brothers and sisters, go to abibiatumi.com and check out the website and make it a favorite. They have all kinds of good stuff, the language programs and seminars and so forth. Abibiatumi.com, A-B-I-B-I-T-U-M-I.com. Smai Pharmacy, S-M-A-I-F-A-R-M-A-C-Y. Smai Pharmacy, give my good brother, Jabril, a call at 731-327-6229. That's 731-327-6229. Or you can contact him by email, smaifarmacy@gmail. smaifarmacy@gmail.com. Smai Pharmacy. He can put out a program for you, man. You're going to get right on the road to optimum health. Optimum health. Right on. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. Check out Wadada's. And, of course, you can give them a call at 404-444-1635. 404-444-1635. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located right across the street from Soul Vegetarian, up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna in the West End here in Atlanta. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. I was in there, last week. Talked to my friend, Mama Nia. Please go, if you're in that area, you're in the Greenbrier Mall, check out Mama Nia. Her phone number is 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. She has a fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, certificates, t-shirts, and all kinds of good stuff at the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore and Coffee Bar, located in Lithonia, my good brother, Gazimde Ajamu. Give him a call at 404-519-8107. That's 404-519-8107. Promoting Afroletics in the new Black Wall Street Market in Stonecrest. The new Black Wall Street Market, located right off of I-20, up, you know, just up the road from where the Black Dot is, because the Black Dot is located right off of I-20 in Lithonia. And this is in Stonecrest, the new city of Stonecrest. And it's a old or abandoned Target store. It was a former Target store, and that's now the new Black Wall Street Market. So Brother Afroletics, he has his business in here. A few other folks I know, my good brother Sajafo has his business, his jewelry business, as well as his artwork business, Timbuktu. So a lot of good stuff. And Brother Mike McGee Jr., he has his CBD business in there. Yep. So check out the new Black Wall Street Market in Stonecrest. Us lifting us to economic development cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Cooperative Economics, as I said the other day, they had an outstanding conference this past weekend. Just a great conference. I talked to Baba Akima and some of the brothers and sisters. It just really turned out great. Good information, well presented. And can't wait to be, hopefully next year we'll be in person. So that'll be, you know, a lot better. You know, well, some people, they like the Zoom conferences. They become used to them because they be at home and they, you know, turn the camera off and go do something else. Yeah, you're right. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People. Tomorrow night is their Thursday night broadcast on Blog Talk Radio. That's blogtalkradio.com/ULU. Us Lifting Us, that Thursday night broadcast, every Thursday night from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. But if you want to call to listen or give questions or concern, dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us. Homeland Village. Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop and all kinds of good stuff. Brother Abijah in Macon, Georgia at 2910 Napier Avenue in Macon, Georgia. Give him a call at 478-256-1166. That's 478-256-1166. Homeland Village in Macon, Georgia. Sun Goddess Sense. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia, inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. For more information, call our good sister Shelly Amonset at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop. Sanjay-Aiti.org. Sister Gabrielle Rilliab has been doing monumental work in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. And brothers and sisters, they're up in the hills, you know, so they don't have a safety net. They don't have government programs, especially that we reach up to there. They're still trying to get Port-au-Prince together, you know, and the other areas in that were affected by the earthquake over 10 years ago. So please, brothers and sisters, go to Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E dash Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org, Sanjay-Haiti.org. Once again, I want to thank Baba Baruti for being my guest. I got an announcement here that his book, Identity, will be discussed this Monday coming up, and the following Monday, two straight Mondays, we'll be talking about identity, the cultural Sealy, society and person, identity, frontline concepts in African-centered psychology. Brothers and sisters, you can order his book on AkabinHouse.com. Go to AkabinHouse.com. If you want to support his educational program with our young people, go to Akabin Institute. Send your check or money order out to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia 30310. But you can use PayPal. Go to yabaruti at yahoo.com for PayPal. And for Cash App, the dollar sign Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. And to make your contributions one time or ongoing, definitely worthy. Brothers and sisters, AkabinInstitute.com. Okay. Now, the fun part of what I do and that is to read the Inyesesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Yes, sir, the Inyesesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. You know, a lot of times as I said to you many times, I go to the Inyesesim and man, it is powerful. It really is. You know, I have a topic for that day and bam, there it is. You know, because I read the Inyesesim the day I'm going to do the program. Actually, sometimes minutes before I'm going to do the program. So, yep. Yeah. Okay, Brother Kwaku, let's do that, man. Kwaku's brother sending me a message, and we're going to definitely do that. We'll do that today. We'll do that today. Yeah. The Inyesesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. March 15th. There are few things in a world as dangerous as sleepwalkers. Ralph Ellison. Even though our enemies would have us believe otherwise in terms of fundamental cultural characteristics, different African ethnic groups do not vary differently or meaningfully from the mother culture. And the same applies to European subgroupings. Naturally or unnaturally occurring, relatively minor and superficial differences in language, dialect, dress, diet, architecture, do not separate distinct ethnic groups or subcultures from their common core culture. Even the great variations we see among Africans in no way compares with the least difference between Africans and Europeans. So when we see overriding similarities between the two favoring the European, we are looking at the wrong Africans or Africans who do not and who are not themselves. Europeans use the psychology of individualism to confuse us as to their global operation as one nation. With it, we confuse the forest for the trees. Knowing this, we are to regain our power and our way. If we are to regain our power and our way, we must be clear about the fundamental differences between the similarities among people. At the fundamental level, all African people are one. Let me repeat. At the fundamental level, all African people are one people, no matter the superficial differences. The same applies to Europeans. And these genocultural differences are of the magnitude and permanence to make us and them forever irreconcilably incompatible. Ashe. I readily distinguish Africans from Europeans. I readily distinguish Africans from Europeans. March 16th. A weak person goes where he is smiled at. A Hiru proverb. The process of creative cultural and social engineering that began molding our traditions began when Africans began. It began with us and we began with it. And because we share life and truth with it, it is still there waiting on our return. The logic behind African traditions has not changed with the passage of time because it still makes sense for us. And that will not change because we will always be African. Our collectively personality, customs, design these traditions to fit us, and they in turn reinforce us. In the process, the cultural foundation came into the life of its own, a continuous life that has lasted throughout all our generations. It lives as an internal entity expressing itself through us. It is a constant and with us until we are no more. The values and beliefs it prescribes for its inheritance determine the form of our traditions take in whatever environment and state we find ourselves. And we shouldn't, and don't, that's true, because that's why we are like we are here, you know. They could not destroy us completely. And we should note that the values and beliefs that come out of this cultural foundation do not change either. If anything changes, it is the people who are the cultural heirs. And when people change what they believe to be and honor as their traditions change accordingly. But it is not really the traditions that change. People in doubt and fear or in love with others, validation, lose sight of what their ancestors gave them. It is they who substitute others' traditions for their own in defiant acts of self-hatred. It is only then that the enemy smiles, so easily disarms us. Ashe. Yeah, Ashe. Affirm, un-African smiles do not disarm me. I know that's right. Un-African smiles do not disarm me. I'm always prepared. That's for sure. Always prepared. Yeah. I know today or yesterday is the 15th, and of course it's the Ides of March. I know my good friend, Brother Research West, sent me some good information on St. Patrick's Day coming up and the pygmies or the leprechauns. Great information. Wes had that information before. Talked on it, I think, a year or two ago about St. Patrick. And, of course, the fable is to him getting rid of the snakes. Some say it was the ancient Druids. I don't know. A lot of stuff about that. But I agree with you. We don't celebrate that. We definitely don't celebrate them killing our people, because the first people almost everywhere were African people, were the Twa people. The diminutive, as my good brother Renoko Rashidi used to say, the diminutive Africoids. Man, I miss that brother. Miss Baba Renoko. Good man. The diminutive Africoids. And So today, or yesterday, was the 15th, the Ides of March, which is the day of death. Understand, which is interesting, before I get to my guest, Brother Franklin Jones, the Black People Matrix. It was not the day of death until Julius Caesar ignored the soothsayer's warning, because March really is the beginning of the year. And the Ides of March was celebration. That was a celebration, the 15th of March. And it's logical that that in this hemisphere, the northern hemisphere, that particularly in the areas where there is the four seasons, that spring would be the beginning of the year, because things begin to, you know, be brought forth. You know, life begins to spring open, so forth, after the winter time or hibernation time or whatever. But it became the day of death because of Julius Caesar's ignoring the warning of the soothsayer, of the prognosticator, of the psychic, saying to him, don't go up in the Senate, dude, because they ain't feeling you. Okay? But of course he ignored it, and Cassius and Brutus was laying in the cut, and they jump out and they stab him, I don't know, 20 some times or whatever, I don't know. She just started digging on him. You know, and of course, at that time, Cleopatra the VII, who was trying to deal with Julius Caesar, and of course she had a baby by him, and which is Caesarian, where we get the word Caesarian section, you know, because she wanted to save Kemet. That's one thing I must add. Even though she was not African, she was part of the Ptolemies, the Greeks that came in, but because of the mixing, I'd say she looked like a high yellow sister, you know, because of the amount of Africans that were still in Kemet and always will be in Kemet, you know, regardless. And I ain't just talking about the, you know, the Nubians and the Africans that are presently in Kemet in Egypt today, you know, because I just saw another piece about where the Africans ancient Egyptians black. Hell yeah, they was. Yeah. That's why I love that Great Pyramid K 2019. And that's why all of you should watch it again and again, because it substantiates what we're talking about in terms of who built the pyramids, us Africans, dark skinned people, and how they were built. They weren't built. We weren't dragging stone. That's literally impossible to drag 10, 20 tons of stone. How much is a ton? 2,000 pounds. Exactly. That's a lot. So anyway, let's get on with this conversation with Brother Franklin Jones, the Black People's Matrix. And of course, my good brother Franklin Jones always brings us great information. Good morning, dear brother. How are you?
Good morning, my brother. I'm fantastic. Always fantastic to be on your program. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man, you bet. You bet. So how have you been? You been doing okay?
Fantastic. I've been doing fantastic. You know, matter of fact, I did a total lifestyle change 2 months ago. I became a vegan.
Right on. I know. I was talking with you about that, and I'm very happy for you. I'm proud of you, man. You know, once again, so these life changes at the age that we are and coming to get older and so forth are necessary if we want to live longer.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And if we're in order to fight for our liberation, we want to be here as long as we can.
That's right. Because, see, this is not a sprint. This is a marathon, you know. Mm-hmm. And so we got to be here. You know, I look at it this way, Brother Franklin. I want to be here at least to see that our people have wakened up, and more and more are waking up, and we're moving in that particular direction. You know, that's why I'm dedicated to doing what I'm doing, you know, because not all of us are lost. Not all of us have fallen victim to Urugu's virus. You know, there's a lot of us. There's definitely a lot of us, unfortunately, but not all of us.
You know what? It's really true because, you know, there are millions of us that are awakened.
Yeah.
But the ideology of the awakened is not being given an actual platform.
Right.
So it creates this illusion that we're all asleep. And then what they do, they take the most ignorant amongst us and they propagate that in front of into the media to create a distortion of the people we are.
Right.
I think a good example of that is, in America, there are millions of African Americans who hate the N-word and never uses it.
Right, that's me. That's me.
That disdain among the African American culture, that group, they're being ignored by the white media controllers who control our media images. And so they keep making out these movies where we're calling ourselves niggas and bitches and our music and everything.
Right.
And it becomes the norm of who we are. You know, it's, you know, the white society has distorted our image of ourselves as well.
Right.
You know?
Well, Frances Kress, she said, you know, we're the only people that celebrate our dementedness. We call ourselves bitches and hoes and niggas and this and that.
Yeah, normalize
you know?
It.
Exactly. You know?
Yo, I was thinking, if there was a European who only spoke an African language, a European who was taught everything about Europe from an African perspective. When you look through that scenario, that there's an African who only speaks a European language, speaks no African language. You know, if you saw a European who only spoke African language, you would naturally say, this guy ain't right. Mm-hmm. You would know that that's his mindset. Being under the ideology of another people, his mind would be distorted.
Mm-hmm.
But when you come to the reality, we, the millions of Africans throughout the diaspora, that is our reality. All of the narratives we receive come from the white society. And the white society constantly puts out false narratives that exalt themselves and marginalizes us. Then they impose that narrative upon us as fact. And then we function based upon it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the social science behind their power. You know, they just social scientists learned long in 1968 that by constantly inundating black people with fraudulent negative narratives about ourselves and fraudulent favorable narratives about Caucasians, they could instill a value system into the collective minds of black people that serves and protects the system of white supremacy. You know, the reality is this too. The white man, the Neanderthal, they control the media image we see 24/7, the narrative that we hear. If someone don't think that they're using this monopoly to shape our minds in ways that benefit themselves, then they are delusional. They are delusional. They don't understand our true reality. You know, one of the greatest tricks the white man has done to the black man is manipulate black people to believe that there are, in fact, many truths, and everyone's entitled to their own truths. This sounds good when you say that, but there's an exception to that rule when it comes to the oppressed. The oppressed must function based upon an accurate understanding of their plight and condition, because if our understandings are flawed, then all remedies that stem from those understandings will also be flawed. So the white man sends lots of disinformation into our community, and this disinformation is designed to keep our understanding flawed. And because our understanding is flawed, we can't liberate ourselves. You see, if everything is a social science that's being employed against us, and a white man uses monopoly over information against black people, when you... Most people don't hear about the Kerner Commission, for example, the Kerner Commission. But when we read or hear about the Kerner Commission, we're hearing the narrative from the white man who distorts the narrative to always benefit himself. But the Kerner Commission, what was really done, they studied the African-American culture and decided on what they needed to do to control black people. In doing slavery, as we know, they utilized the Bible to mentally enslave black people by indoctrinating a white God into the African mind. And this made the African more subservient towards whites and therefore into better slaves. Because you have to think what the indoctrination does. Black people are taught to put this white God above everyone. You're supposed to love this white God more than you love your children, more than you love your wife, your husband, like yourself. Now, when you indoctrinate that type of adoration towards a white God into the minds of black people, that's going to affect how they perceive themselves and how they perceive whites. You know?
And see, the fact that they have developed this religion of Christianity mm-hmm. yes. and it imposed it on the world, and particularly yeah. onto us, and how they've done it is most yeah. crippling. I think that Dr. Clark said it best, is that, you know, the damage that they have done, aside from the physical yeah. captivity mm-hmm. of us, the physical enslavement yeah. of us, is they, yeah. you know, and the colonization, but they colonized yes. information about the world to, and they shaped it and fashioned it in their image and in their yeah. interest at the expense of all humanity. And many people yeah. around the damn world believe whatever the hell Caucasians say, you know?
Yes, yes. Less than two years ago, remember they found these bodies of Native Americans in Canada? They were children, most of them were children. There were 200 grave sites, mm-hmm. And they were buried, 200 bodies were buried. Mm-hmm. And these were Native Americans mm-hmm. who would be Europeans
right.
were indoctrinating.
Right.
And many of these people are still alive. And they were explained how they were taken from their homes
right.
and placed into these white governed places. And they said they would teach them.
Right, these boarding schools. Yeah, these were, yeah, they took them from their families and put them into a boarding school, so
yes,
they had them 24/7.
But when you listen to those people, there's some of them that are 80 years old and 79, they're talking about it. Mm-hmm. At the place, they would teach them that they were savages, mm-hmm. that their spiritual belief is evil, and they should only be Christians. And they were teaching them that they were ugly, that they were... Now, here's the deal now. This is a government teaching these Native Americans in Canada to believe that their spiritual system is lesser, to believe that they're ugly, to believe that they're cursed. So when you see what these people, what was done to the Native Americans in Canada, we have to pull back and recognize it is a deliberate social science. It's a deliberate social science. And I'm going to show. If you go to Canada, for example, and you meet the black population, or if you go to the UK and you encounter the black populations, you go anywhere and you encounter black populations, you will find the same symptoms existing among the black community, where many black people think we're our own worst enemies and we revere Caucasians in spite of the blue history to the contrary. Now, when you see everywhere you're going and you see the same mindset among black people, it's because the same programming is being deployed against us all.
You're most correct, because the bottom line that we must understand, it's not about being German, Italian, mm-hmm. Irish, any of those things. It's Caucasians, and they have the one agenda for them to dominate and control. And so mm-hmm. wherever you go and wherever they are and we are, in fact, Bobby Wright said it best, this defies all laws of probability. Wherever they are and we are, they're in a position of dominance and control, and we're up in a subservial position.
And with that dominance, they control the narrative. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're the first person who said this to me, and it always sticks in my head. You said ultimate power is the ability to create your own self-serving narratives and pose those narratives upon another people, mm-hmm. and then have those people function accept them. Based upon those narratives.
Exactly, have them accept
that's
it.
That's the social science, what the mm-hmm. white man has done. But all the information he gives us tells us that we ain't shit, and he's everything. Mm-hmm. And they keep imposing it upon those narratives. And we start to function based on those narratives, and we don't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
They also propagate misinformation to prevent us from seeing our truth. Like the Willie Lynch, for example, those who believe the Willie Lynch, those who share the Willie Lynch, are unknowingly agents working for the system of white supremacy. Because when black people accept the Willie Lynch as being true, it damages us, because it gives a false reason to doubt ourselves, to doubt our ability to come together. You've heard it. When a black person, you know, we can't do shit. You know, like black people that we lynch with, you know, we lynch. And so we buy into these false narratives, but we must fight against all these false ideologies. You know, it's by design. Like, whenever black people come together in a form that we're now in, it's not unlikely to have people call in and start talking crap about black people. Man, what you mean? All people ain't crap. But we are the only people on the planet who systematically denigrates ourselves. Mm-hmm. They say when the oppressed has been perpetually demoralized, they then start demoralizing themselves. Black people are also the only people who say things like this: "Boy, bring your black ass in this house. Get your nappy head out here, you big lip fool." We put down ourselves. But the worst part is, we've normalized everything. But there's nothing normal about our collective state. There's nothing normal that black people perceive ourselves as the worst enemy and revere whites in spite of our brutal history to the contrary. This is a social science. When you have, okay, here's a fact. I want anyone to, what I'm about to say, you can dispute it, call in. I challenge you. Here's the hidden reality that black people live under white dominance right now. Here's our hidden reality. Here's a scenario why they keep their foot on our neck. Here's the reason why. While all white nations profess equality for all of their citizens, they are all secretly, unrelentingly committed towards the preservation of their white dominance. There's also an immense fear of massive unified black retribution that exists amongst those white nations that have been brutally oppressive to Africans for more than 400 years, as well as has grossly exploited Africa's natural resources for over 400 years. Now, this is the scenario of the people who control our narratives. Now, what they did. They recognized that whenever people are oppressed for long term, this is what they discovered in the 1960s. They didn't have the whole thing together, but they discovered that whenever people are oppressed for long durations, their collective aggression toward the oppressors will continue to grow until acts of massive unified rebellion becomes inevitable. This is an inherent part of the human collective psyche. The oppressed always, always eventually rebels. Always. The fact that 400 years and we're still in this situation without rebelling is proof in itself that they have deployed psychological warfare against us.
Well, because see, the problem, they had to do, but see, the problem is this, that we have rebelled. We have resisted. But the thing is that we wanted them to be nicer to us. We wanted them to share with us. We didn't rebel to be liberated. We didn't rebel to put them down so we can, you know, so we can live our lives as African people. We wanted to be what they are. We wanted, that's why I have an issue with us calling ourselves black. And I know people use it interchangeably. You know, in fact, that was part of our discussion this past Monday with Bubba Baruti, because I played this piece that was on Deaf Poetry about 15 more years ago with Smokey Robinson. Well, Smokey Robinson says, I love being black. You know, I love the word black. You know, I'm a black American. I love being American, you know, and I'm not an African, you know. In fact, if you say you are an African American, if you go to Africa, all you would be, as he said, is a black American taking up space, you know?
Yeah. Because, but you know what's funny about that? When black people say that we're not Africans, but we're black, we don't realize what we're doing to ourselves. If there's a tree and you remove the roots of a tree, that tree is more susceptible to being blown over in a storm because it doesn't have that strong rooted foundation.
Right. And it'll die. If it's not rooted.
Likewise, if you cut a people off from their true roots, those people can be easily manipulated, easily controlled.
Mm-hmm.
So when we cut ourselves off from Africa, we are cutting ourselves off from the foundation of who we truly are, and we also lose our numerical advantage. In the world, there are more black people than there are Caucasians. So by keeping us divided, benefits the system of white supremacy. I think the ultimate situation for we black people is this. All of our narratives are controlled by those who are benefited when we are demoralized, divided, and feel self-loathing. Because this condition makes the oppressed easier to control. Mm-hmm. All of our narratives come from those who benefit from us thinking terribly about ourselves. And because we were born in this system, we don't even think about it. The white man's control of a narrative allows him to even divide the black nuclear family at the most personal and intimate levels. Like what a black man believes about black women collectively, he gets from the white man. What a black woman believes about a black man nationally, he also gets from the white man. This allows the white man to negatively control how black men and black women perceive each other. If in a U.S. example, if you gave a black woman a sheet of paper, and you said, write down 20 things that black men are known for. You'll be able to say things, delinquent on paying their debts, don't take care of children, irresponsible. They have all these long narratives about black men. And what's also connected to those narratives is the one that white men treat you better. White men treat you better. And when you go to the narrative that the black man gets about the black woman, all those also come from white sources. And what accompanies that narrative is that white women are more supportive towards their men, more supportive. So we're constantly being bombarded with propaganda, as I said earlier, that exalts and exonerates Caucasians and that marginalizes, vilifies, and denigrates us. And we are now functioning based upon those narratives. That's the white man's power. I mean, that's his power.
Well,
he weaponized his control over information against us.
See, that's a good piece. That's a good piece right there, Brother Franklin. Power. You know, I've done this and said this so often that we don't understand what power is. In fact, we talk about we're going to empower the people, power this. No.
Yeah.
To me, Dr. Wade Nobles has the most definitive definition of power, what power is.
Mm-hmm.
Power is not politics. Power is not voting. Power is not money. Power is not education or information. Power ain't none of that. Power is the ability to define reality and then have someone else accept your definition as if it's their own. Europeans, when they were land poor, resource poor, and people poor, when they came out of that medieval time, and in fact, the only light of information was in the western part of Europe, in Spain and Portugal, by the Moors, African people, mm-hmm. African Muslims, the Moors. And for 800 years, enlightened them. And so finally, they kicked them out along with the Sephardic Jews. And the European began his so-called Renaissance, winning, going around the world, claiming everybody's stuff in the name of Spain, Portugal, France, England, whatever, and exercising their power, the ability mm-hmm. to define reality. They said, this is the reality, and they imposed it on others. And if you did yes. not accept their reality as if it's your own, they were going to kill you.
Yes, and they still function that way today.
Yes.
We are functioning based on a false reality, but they say the white man says customary for conquerors to write history to favor himself. You mm-hmm. know, the history written by the victors, and they keep putting out these narratives. They put that narrative because they are a group who benefits from the line. That's why they're so against critical theory teaching
right.
in their school.
Exactly. Because they can't handle the truth.
No, they can't. No. The history is built upon lies. The white society sits upon a throne of white exalting lies. Okay? Now there's a reason for it, and from their position, they're doing this for the betterment of their race.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot inspire people if you teach them that they come from caves. You can't inspire people if you teach them that they don't have a great history, okay? That's why when oppressors don't have a great history of their own, they steal the history of the oppressed and give it to their people.
Mm-hmm.
The white man has distorted history to make himself appear more relevant and significant throughout history than it truly was. Now, and we know he has spent billions and unnumber amount of man hours doing this. Now, when you see a group that much effort behind something, so much that much synergy behind something, it's because it serves them. The reason why they whitewash everything is because there are two significant reasons. According to social scientists, people are inherently tribal and do not normally accept the long-term dominance of other racial groups over their lives. People inherently are against this. So in order to do this, you have to manipulate those people. And one way to manipulate those people is to cut the narratives that are fed into a society must be the type that exalts the dominant culture. Like we notice in the news, we never hear nothing negative about white people. Nothing, no negative generalizations about white people. Everything we hear about white people is positive. What this does is it is designed to embed the myth of white superiority into the minds of the non-whites. When the myth of white superiority has been embedded within the society, this creates assumptions by which the society functions that aids in maintaining white social dominance over blacks. People function based upon those narratives. Those narratives affect hiring and firing and interaction with black people versus white people. It's a social science. And it also instills, when people get positive narratives by themselves, this also elevates the self-esteem and unifies them. So that's what's happening to the white society. The white society's self-esteem has been falsely bolstered at the expense of the Africans. And this is our reality. When you go to understand our plight, we look at the African-American culture in 1968 versus today. Look at the difference. We went from calling ourselves brothers and sisters, which we were more unified, to calling ourselves niggers and bitches. We went from agreeing that our proven worst enemy was the white society. Now today, millions of us perceive ourselves as their own worst enemies. Now, when you look at our collective state, you can simply say that the collective aggression of the black masses has been shifted away from the white society and redirected against ourselves. When our change within our culture and our mindset benefits our oppressors, who also consequently control the information that is fed into our minds. So as we see, he has socialized us to think of it as serves him. Now, if someone wants to know my experience in this, yes. When I was a soldier in the military and when we went into Iraq, although we won the ground war, they said, we've been able to, through our weaponry advantage of better tanks and cannons and whatever, we're able to win the ground war. But we, to take over the people's minds, we have to manipulate them. We have to instill a value system into the Iraqi people that make them more accepting of white occupation in the region, as well as more accepting of the puppet white government that the white society had placed in power. So they took over their media, they took over their publications, and they even changed the curriculum in their school books reflect an ideology that benefits the West. And so we started socializing these people. Now, when we started socializing the Iraqi people, there were older people around who knew what propaganda, right?
Right.
They knew that what they're getting in the media was a lie. They knew that everything was a lie. But here's what happened. Eventually, that older, wiser group dies off. And what you're left with is these newer generations of Iraqi people who are growing up under the ideology.
Right.
Under the ideology. So if the Iraqi today mind has been conditioned. Now, this is what happened to black people in the 60s. When black people started calling themselves niggers, the older generation of African Americans didn't like that. So why are you calling yourself niggers? Now, we're not niggers. But as that group died off and a newer generation comes along, the newer generation who was born and reared into this new mindset, that's who we are. It is called ideological subversion. It's when you take control of all of your information and you distort it and you inundate it onto a people and causes the people to start functioning in ways that are against their own self-interest. We are functioning in ways that are against our own interests. And we are, and it clearly benefits the white society. But most of us aren't putting the correlation together. We are thinking in ways that benefits those who control the information that's fed into our minds.
But see, it's easier to do because if you have a society that whites have, that have created, that perpetuates individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. Yeah. Individualism, you don't think collectively. See, individualism is a white desire, but collectivism is an African need, it's an imperative, it's a must, because that's who we have always been. It's just like that example I use with the word Ubuntu. When the Boston Celtics beat my Lakers back in 2010, 2009, you know, they used that mantra, Ubuntu. Mm-hmm. We're together. Yeah. We're together, you know. And it's just like when the Caucasian would say, hey, he has a group of young boys, young kids. He says, I want you guys to run a race from right here to that tree down there. And the one that goes there first, I'm going to give you this big basket of goodies. But they all went together. And the white man says, no. No, he says, no. Ubuntu. We are together. Yeah. So when people see that word and they see, you probably seen it on your Facebook or whatever feed or email where the kids have all their feet in a circle. And if it's a tall one, he kind of has his knees up. So it's all their feet are together in a circle.
Yeah, I see what you're
saying. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's Ubuntu, that we're together.
Yeah.
African, and because of that togetherness, African society and African culture has remained strong. But because we're in this subculture and behave the way we do in this subculture, individually, it has caused for our demise. And it's easy for us to hate each other, to kill each other, to disrespect each other because we've been trained to believe that, just like you said, we ain't shit. But listen, I'm going to take a break. So we come back from the break, brothers and sisters, we're going to join, hope you'll join my good brother Franklin Jones of the Black People's Matrix. If you got any questions, comments, or concerns, give us a call at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. The flautist. I don't know why they call it flautist instead of flutist, but Bobby Humphrey, Harlem River Drive. And don't have a lot of sisters on my list here, but this is Women's Month. So definitely want to try my best to highlight some sisters who made a contribution, not just from a music standpoint, but because of who they are and what they've done and what they contributed to our culture. Always got to highlight our sisters because, you know, if you truly are African, then you respect your species have. You respect your complement. You respect women. That's the one thing that the European didn't understand when he came down into Africa, how we work with our women and women work with us. There was a deep respect for women. So we'll say that part of the conversation for another day. Yep. And I did want to say this about Bobby Humphrey because, you know, she's born in 1950. She's 71 years old and haven't heard from her. And I'm quite sure she's doing well. Hopefully she is. And she was born in Texas and raised in Dallas, Marlene, Texas, and raised in Dallas. And she was heard by Dizzy Gillespie at a talent show in Texas at Southern Methodist University. And he encouraged her to, you know, follow her career and to move to New York. And she did. And she was on the Apollo, and she won the Apollo, and that began her career, her music career. And haven't heard anything from her, but I remember very fondly from back about 30 years ago, man, Bobby Humphrey was doing it well. And her influences, of course, were Herbert Laws and Herbie Mann and James Moody were her influences. And she played the Apollo, Hollywood Bowl, and many others. Bobby Humphrey, Harlem River Drive. Let's get back to the conversation with Brother Franklin Jones of your Black People's Matrix. You sent me a meme that I liked, because a lot of times, not just the words, it's the imagery, it's the iconography that's deep, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So the socialist, you know, I'm going to go ahead.
I was going to say to those who are listening, in order for Black people to truly liberate ourselves, we must first learn of the many social sciences that are being systematically deployed against us by white oppressive forces as a means of maintaining their long-term dominance over us. We have to understand that social science. And if we think we can liberate ourselves without learning that social science, we are kidding ourselves. We are kidding ourselves, okay? I'm giving you an example of a social science, okay, that's been done to us when you're in school and you're young. This happens to white children, too. Now, remember when we were in kindergarten, pre-K, first grade, and we learned about the founding fathers? And we were taught stories like George Washington, "I cannot tell a lie because I was cutting down the cherry tree." Now, remember that story? Now, ask yourself, why is that story a part of the curriculum? It's a totally fictional story. The cherry tree never happened. Here's why that story was created and why it's taught in schools. They were instilling a value system into the minds of young children and conditioning them to have adoration towards the founding fathers. So the story that "I cannot tell a lie, but I was cutting down a cherry tree," it's written so that a child and a young state can comprehend the message within it. And so it makes you think, okay, the founding fathers were good people. The founding fathers were great people. This is how they start instilling patriotism into a nation. You know, all nations think they're the greatest nation. They indoctrinate us through their monopoly over information. Like millions of Black people would say, America's terrible, but there's nowhere in the world I want to live. This is the best place in the world.
That's what Smokey Robinson said. That's what I'm saying. That's a menticide. Yes, that's menticide. That. You know.
Yes. You know, we We always talk about menticide. We always talk about mental slavery. But we are the most mentally enslaved people on the planet. We have to recognize that. Why are we the most mentally enslaved? Because the white society uses their monopoly over information that are fed into our minds to make us think in ways that serve their interests. It's really that simple. It's that frigging simple.
You see, and that's the problem with that, brother Franklin Jones. And you're right, because it's right in your face. It is that simple, and it could be, and it could be very easy to reverse, but it's very hard, because when have implanted something into someone's mind so deeply, and everything that they see, everything that they hear, everything that they learn to read, enforces that. So we're bombarded 24/7.
Yes, the eyes are useless when the mind is ignorant. And the ignorance of the oppressed is the oppressor's greatest weapon. We don't know what's going on. Like, when one of the examples, when a black person says, when you witness a black person making negative comments about his people, many people look at him and say, no, that's not Willie Lynch thing. No. Mm-hmm. That is, what that is whenever he turns the TV on, he's seeing propaganda. He's seeing negative stories. He's continually being demoralized. So he becomes resentful towards his people. Those black people who you meet who hate black people, who all you is talk negative about black people, that what you are witnessing started from hurt, started from humiliation. When from the time a black person is young, when you're watching the news, we keep seeing our narratives are negative constantly. And we ask ourselves, we feel that we're being publicly humiliated because our narrative is being shown before the world, they're all negative.
Mm-hmm.
Then what happens is we look at it and we say, man, why are people can't get our act together? Now, why are we so messed up? And someone would take the position, I'm going to go out of my way to show white people that we're not all bad. We are functioning directly off of those white narratives. You know?
Mm-hmm.
That's how the white man controls us.
See, and that's a lot of us, because but the way you're trained, especially to think individually, you don't think that somebody would be that evil. You don't think somebody would be that sinister, that demonic, that dastardly, that would do something like that, but it's consistent. I'm going to get some callers in on this conversation. Give us a call at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We also have some people in the queue. So if you want to ask a question or comment or concern to my good brother, Brother Franklin Jones of the Black People's Matrix, hit star twice and we'll get you in. Hit star twice. Go ahead, brother.
I want to show you another example, real life example of how we're constantly being manipulated, okay? Remember when Castile, the brother inside the car who was shot by a police officer while live on Facebook? Atlanta Castile, what's the name?
Yeah.
Castile.
Right, Atlanta Castile in Minnesota.
Okay, when he was shot and his girlfriend filmed it live on Facebook, it went viral and there was rage all around the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So immediately the government puts out another story. Four police have been shot today. Four white police officers have been shot today. And the person you saw was a black militant man. So now, once we start, our anger towards the white establishment became subdued when we kept seeing the report for these faces of these white police officers who were killed by an angry black man. And then our sympathies were shifted to the police. Sympathies to the police officers, those brave, heroic men who lost their lives. So once that propaganda became the national narrative, the narrative about a black man being killed became secondary. So the rage that fueled us when we first saw the video was now muffled by a new news story. And then here's the deal. That news story, it never went on trial because conveniently they got a robot with a bomb on it, walked up to the guy, and blew him up. And America's history, have you ever heard America dealing with a robber that way, blowing him up? Now, it conveniently, there's no trial, there's nothing. Now, it is clearly that this was what's called a false flag operation. You use propaganda to control the people. The white man constantly uses his propaganda to control us. Even, for example, what he did to the King image. As you know, in 1999, the U.S. government found guilty as part of the conspiracy to kill Dr. King, Okay. And as we know, the government resented him. He was called a nigger preacher by Lyndon B. Johnson. FBI director wanted him to commit suicide. Okay. Now, but after assassinating him, what did they do with him? They took his image of the non-violent, and they exalted him, and they used his image of non-violence as a method as to manipulate the black masses. This is the ideology we want you to follow. This is the ideology we want you to follow. This is the ideology. So they use him as the image to a propaganda tool to scare our culture. Be like Dr. King. Be like Dr. King. But here's the reality. When those football players took a knee, that was a peaceful protest. And look how the white society treated them. You see, they have no intention on giving black people liberation, because the white society sees the liberation of black people as being the erosion of their white dominance. That's how they correlate it. Giving you more power is an erosion of my dominance. And the white man has no intention of losing his dominance. So he uses his control over information against us to protect and maintain his position of white dominance. This is the science behind it. And if a person is listening right now and thinks that although the white man has is controlling all of the media images and narratives that are fed into your mind, into your home every day, if you think he's not exploiting that control to shape your mind in ways that benefits himself, you are a goddamn fool. From the position of the white man, it would be reckless not to exploit that disposition of power over information. It would be reckless. They say it is a duty of the government to protect the status quo from any dissent that may rise up from the oppressed. This is a part of national interest. But see, you're never hearing these stories. And every government, there are what's called two governments. What is the public persona, and one is what you call the shadow government. The public persona is the image you see that propagates the caring for all of the citizens. Okay? And I mean, if people buy into that narrative, but the shadow government does operations all the time that the public never hears about. And the shadow government is the one that pushes protects the ideology of maintaining white dominance. This is our hidden reality. This is the scenario we live under. It's simple. I explain it like this. You tortured a man. You tortured him for 10 years, and you have him locked in your backyard. And in your backyard, there's a box with a gun in it. The last thing you want is that man you've been torturing to get that gun. So what you're going to do? I'm going to do whatever I can so he has no desire for that gun. He has no desire to even go and look for it. I'm going to shape his mind in ways where I don't have to worry about him. Like Carter G. Woodson was saying, right. You know, if you can control right. a man's thinking, you don't have to worry about his actions. Now, what has hurt me every time I use the term Carter G. Woodson and the miseducation of a Negro, I'm hurt because that brother was so before his time. And he, over 100 years ago now, he wrote that book and put it out. And when you look around, black people are clueless of what that book is saying. The book is telling you that black people are being socialized to be at the footstool of white people through the education they teach us. We are being socialized to adhere to white dominance.
Here's a good example. There's a documentary out, and I mentioned it before in this program, called Everything's Going to Be All White. Everything is going to be all white. On YouTube, if you go to YouTube and you put in Everything's Going to Be All White, you'll see the trailer, and then you see the amount of critiques or reactions. And you also can see the first installment, the first piece of the documentary, which is about 50 minutes long. There's three of them. And I've seen the whole thing. And to me, it's on point. Yes, there have comedians and people trying to be funny and so forth. But a lot of the people who are good resource people, professors and so forth, and people in their fields, you know, they're saying what it is. And you also see people of different cultures. You see the indigenous people talking about what Europeans have done. You see Asians and so forth. So you see all these people talking about Caucasian people because it is true about who they are and what they have done. And so when you look at the reactions, I understand the Caucasians are going to act vehemently against this. I mean, just the vitriol that they've spilled, but also to us because of our conditioning. We're calling it racist. We have no damn idea of what racism is, but we're saying, oh, that's racist. No.
That's the white, we're being gaslighted. The white man gaslights us. You remember Joseph Goebbels. He was Adolf Hitler.
Yeah, Goebbels. Goebbels.
He was in charge of propaganda.
Yeah.
And here's what he told, he was teaching. He says, always charge the oppressed with that which you are guilty of. If the oppressed calls you racist, you call him a racist. It's a gaslighting type. It deflects. Now, remember earlier I said the white man sees the rising of black people as being erosion of their dominance? Gaslighting tactics allow them to hold on to their power without getting black people sick. Just by using gaslighting tactics, okay? For example, when the football players were taking a knee, what would they do? They were called unpatriotic. They would call all kind of names. Never were their grievances addressed. And what happened? Black people stopped protesting. We don't talk about it anymore. Football players are still going. Nothing. And the white man made no laws to meet those complaints. They created no legislation to fulfill that protest. None. Like they've done to the Chinese, writing something to protect Chinese. They have done nothing to ease the protest of black people. Not one single damn thing. And how they achieve it? They achieve it through gaslighting black people. It's really amazing how this stuff works. Let's say you rally 20 of your friends to go out and protest against white people killing black people. I said 20 of your friends. Now, while you're standing there protesting, the establishment kept saying, well, what about blacks who kill blacks? What about blacks who kill blacks? What about blacks who kill blacks? Now, although whites who kill, about blacks who kill blacks, although that is not a rebuttal for white cops who routinely kill black people, those who are sworn to protect the public routinely killing black people, I mean, that is so ridiculous. Imagine if a black cops were routinely killing white people. And when white people were tested, we said, what about whites who kill whites? 86% of whites are killed by whites. That's not a real rebuttal. But if you keep saying it to the person, the mind is easy to be manipulated when it doesn't know what's being done. Now, when you take your 20 friends out, they keep watching and keep hearing, what about blacks who kill blacks? All of a sudden, they're going to say, yeah, that's true. What about blacks who kill blacks? The mind's protesting this shit. We don't say that when black people kill each other. We don't say that when black people kill each other. I'm not protesting this. The ignorance of the oppressed is the oppressor's greatest weapon. We have to learn the social sciences, okay? Gaslighting allows you to deflect and distract. The oppressed is never wrong. Excuse me, the oppressors are never wrong, and the oppressed is never right. Never. And you never acknowledge the grievances of the oppressed. When we kept saying we were a problem with police killing, the establishment did not acknowledge it. They kept deflecting. To understand the tactic where you can actually see it, if you watch the internal fight that's happening in the country between the Republicans and the Democrats. Now, if you study how the Republican deals with the Democrat troops, you will see how black people are being controlled by merely shifting different narratives. When the Democrats says that on January 6th, President Trump led a people on the House. It was treasonous. And how does the Republican respond to that? That never happened. Those people were patriotic. There was no assault on January 6th. There was none whatsoever. Now, and the Republicans keep saying that. Now, here's how this works. The Republicans had no true rebuttal. They have no true argument to defend Donald Trump's action. But so what they do is gaslight. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not what happened on January 6th. That didn't happen on January 6th.
And see,
when you do that, one thing before you go, I'll let you go. Once you keep saying that, the people start to, their minds get distracted and says, well, maybe January 6th didn't happen. You start to question your own position. You start to questioning your reason for protesting. Gaslighting psychological warfare. And it's a key part of maintaining white dominance. You have to gaslight black people. Shift our collective aggressions away from them and redirect it against ourselves. This is the social science that's been deployed against black people. I'm sorry, go on, brother.
No, because what you just said is the example. If we understood it and heard it and seen it at the time that they were talking about it, is a clear example of gaslighting. You're right. The Republican Party officially said that was a justifying protest.
Yes, that's what
they stated. That's what the Republican Party officially said. And even though there was a number of people in the Democratic Party, a number of people in media who challenged them on that, but it did not last for long. They made a challenge. Yeah. That was it. And so then now what you heard from the Republican Party kind of like, oh, okay. Yeah, maybe that was. But in your right mind, you knew. And in fact, in your right mind, you know Donald Trump order that Donald Trump should be up.
Behind the scenes, they're saying it.
Yes.
But when they have the talking points in public, they use talking points.
And so he should be in prison. Donald Trump should.
Yeah,
in fact,
he should be in prison.
It's ludicrous to think that all these folks in who are afraid of, just like the DOJ, this cat is Merrick Garland. He's weak. Because to me, I'd have just square off all up in his ass, especially since the Republican Party denied him even the opportunity to even interview to be a Supreme Court justice because the Republican Party said, this election is like 10 months away and we should not be trying to put a Supreme Court person on the Supreme Court that far away. We'll let the people decide. But oh no, when what's her name died, only 2 months before the upcoming election, all of them, even those who said that shit, all of them, you say, no, let's go right now and put a person up for the Supreme Court right now.
Yeah.
So Donald Trump has appointed 3 people to the Supreme Court, 3 deeply conservative people to the Supreme Court. And although I can give less than a rat's ass about it, but the point being is the hypocrisy of what they do. The line of what they do.
Now, I would like to point out the point of I referenced the Republicans because it gives you an example of what's being done to black people. If you notice that when the Republicans were in power, when they were controlling both the House and the Senate, they would impose their narratives forward. When they did legislation, they would push their legislation forward. And the narratives from the Democrats were being walked over. That's the same tactic the white society used and how they control black people. I'll give you another example where this thing exists, the deflecting. Do you remember when Sarah Palin was running for vice president?
Right.
And she had to do a debate with Biden, the other guy running for vice president. She was debating against him, right? Okay. And she was trained. They knew that she didn't have much knowledge. They knew that she was ill-prepared for a national global audience. They discovered this. Mm-hmm. So here's what they did with her. They taught her how to deflect and distract. So when Biden would throw a question at her that she didn't know the answer to, she deflect. Like she would say, I think a more pressing topic that the American public wants to hear is why did this happen? You see, this allowed her to deflect without losing the debate. She didn't sound dumb. If she didn't have an answer, I don't know, whatever, she would have failed the debate. But because she always responded with something, it allowed the Republicans to say that she won the debate. What I'm trying to say, there are social tactics. There are social sciences. There are people who study how the human mind works, and they've weaponized it against us. Okay. There are many inherent flaws within the human psyche. And many, and our enemies have studied these human flaws within the human psyche and used it to maintain their power. You know, some people said the white man's voodoo is the strongest voodoo, because it's not a voodoo. It's a social science. He used his monopoly over information to twist us. That was the fact that our state of confusion is a result that we're always being gaslighted. Now, here's the thing, the part that connects to this gaslighting. People who are constantly gaslighting are able to experience greater sense of depression. People who experience this gaslighting, it can lead to such frustration that they become more violent. It can lead to more drinking, more alcohol, using drugs. I'm not trying to scapegoat our community, because I'm telling you the state of our community as depicted by the white society is not a true reality. I'm just saying there's an attack on our minds, and we have been conditioned not to see the attack on our minds. We are conditioned to believe in frivolous myths and fairy tales rather than elevating our minds to see the true social science. I mean, if we would only critically think and use our third inner eye, but black people have been conditioned to allow the white man to tell us what to think, how to think. There are black people listening right now who have never had an original thought, who has never had a thought, who has never read a book that was written by a white man. And this is our reality. I mean, like I said, if you and I encountered a European in Africa who only spoke African dialect, we would say this. Yeah, we know said it right. We would know that if a European only speaks the African language and knows history only as what the Africans have taught him, we know that the damage has been done to him. But that damage among we black people is normalized. And then the white society, they act as though they don't know what's happening, but they know what's happening. They did this. Mm-hmm. This change within our, this fundamental change within our culture was done by the white society.
Yes, with intent.
It was
intentional. Let me get a caller in here, brother. Brother Franklin, okay. We got some callers waiting. Me to get a caller in here. 646-646, good afternoon.
Well, if I see my main man, Boogie Woogie Jones, is back in the house. How are you, Boogie Woogie?
I'm fine, my dear brother. Always a pleasure hearing you.
You didn't deliver my egg.
Hey, Ochi, let me call you right back.
Okay. All right, Jay. All right. We'll get Jay back in.
I want to show how people normalize their mindset, and they think their minds is normal. They think they're right.
Mm-hmm.
Thought that their minds can be hijacked. They mm-hmm. hate the thought. No, anybody controlling me? Anybody controlling me? You know, they hate the thought that their minds can be hijacked.
Right.
Yes. The white society control over our narrative allows them to steer our culture. For mm-hmm. example, although we have black people in America, and we have whites in America,
mm-hmm.
the culture are being controlled and steered differently. In the black community, for a long time, this ideology was born where the black woman said, I don't need a man. I don't need a man. As long as I have my Jesus, I don't need a damn man. But we never saw that ideology extended towards the white community. We never hear white women say, I don't need a damn man. I don't need a damn man. We never heard that.
Mm-hmm.
It's because the white man, by controlling our narrative, they can produce movies. And in the movie, the woman's worst enemy is a black man. The black man is mistreating her. You keep putting out these programs, and then they start functioning based upon those narratives.
Right. They become self-fulfilling.
Yes. People mm-hmm. are like computers, right? We're like computers. No matter how intelligent a person may be, if it's possible to control the input that we send to his mind, it's entirely possible to control what he or she will believe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't have to be sure to figure this one out. We black people are thinking and behaving in ways that benefit the white society. And the white society has a monopoly over the information that's been fed into our minds. Now, come on now. Our condition is too widespread to be unintentional. Come on now. Yeah. Open your eyes.
So let's take another caller here, brother. We got a few people waiting here. I got brother Jay back on. Let me get this caller here. Sister Habiya, how you doing?
I'm blessed. How are you?
I'm doing well.
To your guest, yes, this analysis is very critical and very powerful, so I'm appreciating what the guest has said.
Thank you.
And, you know, it was. I had just a couple of points of that, you know, we make the statements that we're the only ones who hate each other, and I don't find that to always be the correct narrative, because white people, they're hating each other also. They're advocating a nuclear war. They're raping and robbing and perpetuating a lot of hate for themselves also. And Chinese people, they manifest actions like trying to straighten their eyes, trying to be European and hating their Chinese features. And then also we have white people that try to emulate us. They try to thicken their lips and suntan and et cetera. So I think that that's something to keep in perspective. And I feel like we do have a lot of love and unity. And we should be aware of that and acknowledge that and have that to grow. Because, for example, when I look at what happened with Ahmed Aubrey, you had all the African people and black people were coming together in unity. They had the new Black Panther Party. They had Black Lives Matter, the churches, all out there supporting and protesting the cause. So, and being outraged at the murder of one of our black man child. You know, and also they came together with George Floyd. So I think that it's important to acknowledge that and to build upon that. And if we say we're the only ones doing these things, then that's, you know, manifesting, you know, another issue about that. So I had wanted to point that out. I think we need to believe that and love each other. I know so many people that as a Pan-African community, we have a lot of love and unity. And so we need to
we do.
Embrace that. And
yes,
have
we
that
do.
Growth.
Yeah.
And I'm hearing, and one of the other things that I'm appreciating with the guest is because we make these analyses and they're so critical and germane, and then we're putting out what can we do. And I'm hearing that he's saying, you know, part of our answer is that we have to, you know, we have to be aware of how they deflect, and we have to be a social scientist and be aware how they gaslight that and to fight against that. And I wanted to ask him what other kind of measures does he suggest for us to prevail? Because I know we're going to be victorious. And what some of the other measures that we can do?
All right, sister. Thank you, Sister Javier. Brother Franklin?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I thank the sister for what she said. I'd like to say this, you know, we have to be careful that we do not negate our state, what's been done to us, because we see a white person tanning on the beach, or we see Asians who get their eyes rounded. Asians who get their eyes rounded, yes, they've captured the European standard of beauty, and they go ahead and they get cosmetic surgery to look more European. But the fact that we have these cases among other groups, it doesn't negate how much ours is. We are the most severest when we come about making negative generalizations about our own people. If you're in a room with 200 black people and you find yourself on stage praising our communities, it's not unlikely to have someone in the audience and I don't know who you're talking about, and stop putting down your people while you're against you. I've had black people argue with me that we're cursed. I had black people arguing saying that we are our own worst enemy. They're arguing against their own self-interest, and they don't realize it. This is because the Africans have been socialized to think and behave in ways that protect white society. Socialized when the oppressor exploits their monopoly over information that are fed into the mind of the oppressed to shape the thoughts of the mind of the oppressed to think in ways that serve and protect the white society. Right now, for example, there are some black people, if they heard us speaking right now, their response will be, why you don't like white people? What you got against white people? Their mindset has been so transformed against their own mental liberation that when they see other black people speaking of the mental liberation of black people, their response is, say, why you don't like black people? Their response is, you are racist. Their response is, say, man, you are that black shit. I ain't got time for all that black shit.
Let me get another call in here, brother. Let me get another call. 646-646, good afternoon.
Yeah, what's happening, Ocean Franklin?
All right.
Hey, listen, one of the things that always amazed me in this form of discussion is how it seems like we don't realize that white people doing what white people are supposed to do. And to expect anything else from them is like kind of, to be honest, madness.
Mm-hmm.
Why should a right. white person...
You're 100% right.
I mean, why shouldn't a white person treat every other ethnic group in the manner in which they treat them if their sole purpose is to survive what's going on? Their sole purpose is to be in a position of dominance, to be in a position of control. So if that's the case, his total job and one of the key elements of his job is manipulation.
Yes.
And
yes.
He's going to manipulate you to the point to where as you don't know if you coming or going. And the
exactly.
sad thing is most black people don't know if they coming or going. So why do we really expect anything different? Now, the flip side is the tragedy is that we're not able to reverse it and do the same to them. That we just go along and get along, take it, and just basically deal with it in the manner in which we try to place ourselves in a situation of survival, and that ain't what it's about. So
see,
the bottom line is, man, everything and anything the white man do should not surprise you. It should be expected. And hey, man, you know, in a way, to be honest, you just got to take your head off to this devil and just understand clearly that he's never going to stop. Never going to stop.
No,
it's not going to get no easier. It's not going to get no better. Your job is to pick up on the contradiction and to be able to see past it and move forward for what Dr. Baroudi said Monday, our sovereignty.
Yeah. But see, the problem is that the illusion that he consistently prevails and imposes on us makes us think and behave in the way that they dictate. And so, therefore,
yes.
all we do is be mad about it and cry about it, but we don't do anything to separate ourselves. We don't step outside of the imposed boundaries that they have put on us. We don't try to release the vice grip that they have on our minds. And the only way to release that vice grip is to infuse yourself with knowledge of yourself and history and your culture so you can turn that knob at the end of the handle to release it. And then once it's released, you don't challenge them. To hell with them.
Yeah.
You come together on yourself. Let me take another caller. 602, good afternoon.
Yes, Brother Oshie.
Hey, Brother Marcus. Brother Marcus, how are you? Good.
I'm doing great, good brothers. You know, I'm going to make a request for Brother Franklin to come back again and talk a little bit about how this European religion of Christianity, how that play into the psyche of our people. Because right now, we're trying to break that psyche in Jamaica. And Brother Frank, it's the toughest thing. They can't get rid of that white savior. So I would really, you know, appreciate you guys coming back and Brother Frank and John doing specifically how European religion and having a white savior, how that plays into our psyche. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Brother Marcus. And definitely we'll do that. Definitely.
Yeah, see, that is absolutely right. We are functioning based upon white narratives. And those narratives, when we accept those narratives being true, we turn ourselves against ourselves. I think the best example of the power of who control narratives is when you study the history of the European Jews. The European Jews, first of all, they were never Jews enslaved in Egypt. That's a fairy tale. When they created the Bible, they created a fictional story of Jews coming out of Exodus out of Egypt. That never happened. But here's the deal. So although the Jews are merely converted to Judaism, they are in no way connected to the
Hebrews.
Hebrews.
They're not connected to the Hebrews of ancient time. These are late converts to Judaism.
But what they did was they created this narrative that they are the Jews.
Right.
And they imposed that.
Right.
And if you jump in your car, you'll drive around, you see buildings, communities, synagogues. You would see billions of dollars these people have built based upon the narrative that they're Jews.
Right.
You see, narratives don't have to be true for people to function based upon them. All that matters is the people who receive the narrative believe that they're true. So to better group, the white society feeds false narratives into society, and society functions based upon it. You know, when you come from the lowest, you can't teach that damn history. You cannot teach, if you come from the lowest, you can't teach that history. Because if you teach that true history, it undermines your position of dominance. It undermines it. So the white man can't teach you his true history of him living in caves, of how barbaric he was. So he whitewashes to make himself appear more relevant, more significant, and more humane throughout history than he truly were. Mm-hmm. And people function based upon that. There are many of white people who walk around with a false sense of superiority.
Mm-hmm.
This benefits from the white supremacy.
Right.
We have to understand how people function off of that narrative. Okay.
All right.
Alex, one thing earlier, I think I was trying to request what someone said earlier. I never say things like, most black people don't know what the hell's going on. I never say that. And I never say that because I have to be honest with myself that I don't know anything about the collective set of black people other than what the white man gives me. And I know that the white man is always going to give me an image of my people that makes white supremacy stronger. I know the white man is always going to give me an image of my people that keeps us divided and demoralized because it makes the oppressed easier to control. I know who the information is coming from. Now, ask yourself this. Every negative narrative that black people presently believe about themselves came either directly or indirectly from the white society.
Right.
Now, I'm asking anyone listening right now, answer this question. When in history did the white society earn the blind trust of black people? And when in history did the white society ever earn the credibility to exclusively control all black narratives? Never. They've been lying about black people for 500 years.
Right, they just took it.
And black people, they socialize it to continue believing what they say. And we keep accepting the lies,
right,
although they've been doing the exact same thing for 500 years.
Let me tell you, I think a good time to come back on and talk about what Brother Marcus was talking about is next month, Easter. Easter. Let's get this caller in. I hope this is my good friend from across the pond. Is this Brother Paul?
I'm alive and kicking, Brother Ochi.
How you been, man? I haven't heard of you in a while. You sound great. Good to hear you.
Well, every day I get another day and I get to breathe this beautiful air, and I get to see the sun. I know I'm alive, and that's all I need, Brother Ochi.
I know that's right, man. That's right. That's confirmation. You're still alive. And if you're still alive, man, you can still do the work. You still have an opportunity to do the work.
I don't ask for anything else. That I see another day, and if I see another day and I'm healthy and strong, I will do better. That's it.
That's
simple as that.
Right on. Good to hear from you, Brother Paul. Yeah.
I know you ain't got much time, so I'm going to make it quick. Yeah. You know, I like to think, I'm now 51 years of age, but Ochi, and I've been doing this thing a long time, studying our people, observing, listening to the rhetoric, doing my research, reading books, etc., etc., etc. The point I'm at right now, I realized a long time ago we are under attack, we're under severe attack. I'd just like to put my brother Franklin, and maybe we can deal with it another time, because I know he's a soldier, an ex-soldier, yeah? I'm saying to him, this is my point and the way I see it right now. We can search, can know what the enemy's doing, can regurgitate it, we can verbally masturbate it, we can do everything we want to do. But at the end of the day, as an ex-soldier, he must know all the theoretics, with all the cross-examinations, with everything you study, the only objective is to come back alive. Now, the point being is, right, many of us are not coming back alive. Many of us are contributing to our own death. Yeah. Many of us are committing suicide. Many. Okay? So with all the theoretics, with all the reading, with all the we must know, at the end of the day, we're still dying. Big time. Big time. Mm-hmm. Right? So I want to know from him, and I want maybe next time when he comes on, tell us how we stop this attack, how we can come back alive, how we can stop committing suicide, how we can stop selling drugs to our brothers, to kill our brothers and sisters, how we can stop selling out one another. That's what I want to know. We can survive this, because we ain't surviving it. We're under serious assault. These last 2 years, right?
Yeah.
Some of us, right, I've heard people come on the radios and tell us to go and get an injection. I've heard that. Right, and these people call themselves conscious. They tell us to go to this devil and take these injections. I heard that. Yeah. These people are not conscious, as far as I'm concerned. They're pretenders, or they lost it, and they're pretending that they're conscious. They're pretending that they know something that they don't. How can you, after this devil's history, tell me to go and get an injection from this devil? You're not right. Yeah. You're telling me that. You're not right. Yeah. You're just pretending. And this is where we're at, Baba Ochi. Let's stop pretending. Heard these people come on the radio telling me that they're conscious and telling me to go and get an injection from this devil with his history, of wiping us out.
Right.
These people ain't conscious. This is where we're at. So we can verbally masturbate all we want or write as many books as we want. We are under severe attack and it hasn't stopped. It's just getting worse.
Right.
I wanted him to tell us when he comes back on how we can stop this attack and how we can survive. Because he's an ex-soldier and he knows with all the verbal garbage, right, only the thing in the end is that you come back alive. Come back. Because if you haven't got your life, you haven't got nothing. And many of us are just committing suicide. Leave it there. Take care.
All right, brother. Thank you, Brother Paul. Appreciate you, man. Thank you for listening. Please continue to listen and call Brother Paul. Go ahead, Brother Franklin.
When I was a training...
Make it brief, because we're already at the top of the hour, brother. Go ahead.
Okay. Can I make it quickly? When I was a training psychological warfare and propaganda, and I saw what they were doing to the Iraqi people and so on, it said the only way to fight propaganda is with your own counter-propaganda. Mm-hmm. And your counter-propaganda must continually be shared and continually pushed forward, no different than the lie has been done. You just keep spreading the proper information. The white man doesn't want black people to gain a clear and accurate understanding of our plight and condition. This is why they spread so much disinformation into our communities. They're pleased when we believe in the Bible. They're pleased when we believe in Willie Lynch, because those are false knowledge. And the worst enemy of knowledge is not ignorance, it's false knowledge. Because an ignorant person may continue to pursue and search to find his truth. But a person with false knowledge, believing is true, stops searching. Therefore, he becomes stagnant and mentally enslaved into a state of arrested development by the false knowledge. This is what happens to millions of black people who are functioning based upon the biblical ideology or the Willie Lynch ideology. Those are false knowledge that is used to keep the black man distracted from seeing the truth of his condition. Because when people know better, they do better. This is an inherent part of the human psyche. When people become aware of the danger that's being deployed against them, they do things to save themselves. They do things to liberate themselves. So the white man has created a system that most black people can't comprehend. We don't recognize it. And it is not because we're dear or stupid. They use the same propaganda campaigns for controlling the white masses as well. These are social sciences that they're deploying against us. And they use this to control. In fact, when they first started this one out of Tavistock, they were using it to control the white masses primarily. They say if they wanted to create a global system where the ruling elites, the small 3%, would be in control of all the world's finances, it shows that they would have to be able to control the minds of the masses. And they did some studies, and they found that
all they had to do was take over the major news reports, the major media companies on different countries, different continents. And once they are able to control those narratives, they can, they put their editors in place, and they make sure that their news is synced. So when they're all telling us the same lies, we believe those lies to be true. That's how we're being controlled. It wasn't until 1968 when they recognized that the methods used for controlling black people during slavery was no longer working. They recognized the protest. They recognized the unprecedented protest by black people. And they fear us the most. Why do they fear us the most? You see, here in America, unlike the Chinese who, they oppressed and moved aside, unlike the Native Americans who they pushed across the land and put them in barren areas, the Africans in America have fought the system of white supremacy more than any other racial group in America's history. More than any other group. African Americans' protest is unprecedented. African Americans protested with civil disobedience, militant needs, and with African American lawyers pleading for equality in America's highest court. The director of the FBI said the worst challenge against the national interest of America is the unification of the American Negro. We must not allow the American Negro to be unified. So therefore their focus on us now. There's a propaganda tactic when you say, and here's how it goes. Once you identify your greatest threat, your greatest enemy, you use the media to marginalize, denigrate, and vilify them. You strip them of their you attack their character. Once you attack their character, you keep marginalizing them. This prevents them from leading up any future revolts against you. Because now no other minority group is going to follow black people, because black people have become the dregs of society. So they did a character assassination on our image to prevent anyone else from following us in any future endeavors. And another reason why they fear us. They fear us because after slavery was abolished, 70 years following slavery, African Americans submitted 724 patterns to the U.S. Pattern Office. Now, when you see a people come directly from slavery, where they were denied an education, and in less than 80 years, they submitted 724 patterns. And that more than doubled the number of patterns submitted by the white society. Even today in America, the U.S. Patent Office is disproportionately filled with patterns with black patents by African Americans. Most inventions that have revolutionized the world came from the mind of an African. These are facts. So how does the white man deal with this? He used his monopoly over narratives to feed the black man a different narrative. They keep telling us we ain't nothing. It's almost like you capture a lion and you control all the lion's narrative. You keep giving him the narrative that you want to shape his mind. This is the reason why millions of black people today don't know that most of the revolts that took place in American history. They always show us the passing slave, yes, boss, yes, master. They don't want to show us the revolt because they don't want that image to be placed into our minds. They exploit their monopoly over information to always, always shape our minds to think in ways that serve their interests.
Well, listen, brother, I got to go. I got to go. I appreciate
I'm
you.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. I just want to say that, it's always great that you come on and we discuss these things, because the bottom line is we are trying to put something on the minds of our people. Our problem is that we're not operating in our right mind. We haven't infused ourselves with knowledge of self. We continue to believe the narratives that this society has.
Yes.
And has presented us. And of course it is not for our benefit. It never has been and it never will be. And until we come to that understanding and then develop the mindset and the narratives that will infuse us with knowledge and pride and dignity and trust with each other. You know, once again, it is imperative that we do this, because either we do it or we die. Because what the Caucasian has for us basically is genocide. What he has for us, yes, there's a few of us and a dark face in a high place, and we as a people, we just think that there's such progress being made and examples and so forth. But in reality, this is our demise. And if we do not come together and embrace Pan-Africanism, it's Pan-Africanism or perish. It's unify or die. That is the model of this, the model of this program. Because it's, that's the bottom line. Either we do this or we die. Everything else is bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is bullshit. So, Brother Franklin, I appreciate you, man. You have a blessed and wonderful day, man. Always great to have you. And I'll get you back on again. And of course, you know, so I'm going to got to get out of here.
I think this program deserves a part two. I was right in the middle of this.
All right on. Again. I heard that. Okay.
Peace, my brother.
We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell, damn it, don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahadie. Bibi Fahadie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Hope to see you on Friday. Peace, family.